The Man in the Iron Mask.
Adapted from a story by Alexandre Dumas and written by Eric Scott, a George Edwards production. Cardinal Mazarin has just dispatched his niece off to a convent in the country. The next day, we find the king and his advisor, Letellier, looking through the windows which overlook his mother's palace. Maria Theresa is expected, and soon they see her step from a carriage.
Why was I born a king? Why am I Louis XIV? Oh, to be forced to marry a frowsy sack of coal like that.
Your Majesty, she is not quite the sack of coal.
Yes, but look at the way she walks up the steps. Or look at my mother coming to meet her. Oh, the difference between the two of them. My mother, tall, stately, willowy. Ooh, now she's embracing the sack of coal.
Your Majesty's wit can be biting. Perhaps she's quite comely when one views her at close quarters.
She's all quarters, my dear Letellier. Dear sweet Maria Mancini and I weren't even allowed to say goodbye.
One thing I can't understand, Your Majesty. It seems that you allow the Cardinal to dictate to you.
Dictate to me? No one dictates to the King. What do you mean?
I merely passed a remark, Your Majesty.
Well, I look upon the Cardinal as a sort of second father. He was a close friend of my own father and my mother. He guided their policy successfully. He looks after all my affairs of state. Well, I feel that if ever my Lord Cardinal left me, I would be much, much a harassed man. I prefer to enjoy my pleasure and allow the Cardinal to endure the cares of state.
The next day, there was great activity in the King's Palace at Versailles, where a royal visitor was to be welcomed. The whole court was called to a reception for that evening. The dukes and the peers and the marshals of France were summoned, and also the chief officers of the King's household and the general court. There was to be music and dancing and the presentation at the throne. All that day, the lackeys and the servants were busy preparing the throne room and the ballroom beyond, filling these luxurious rooms with sweet-smelling flowers and additional candelabra, loading the tables with every kind of drink, with collations of fruit, oranges, citrons, and dried fruits. And meanwhile, Maria Theresa was being adorned in the best that Spain could offer. But it was a poor best, for she had heard of the lavish magnificence of the women's dresses in the French court.
If you will stand quite still, Your Highness, I will pin these flowers in your hair.
My dress is somber, isn't it?
Your Highness, you always look beautiful in black, especially with the pearls.
I fear that black is not becoming to the French court. How soon before we go to the reception?
Half an hour.
Half an hour. And then I walk through a great room, hundreds staring at me. Foreigner from a strange land, wondering whether they should curry favor or spy behind my back. Perhaps they will do both. And then at the throne, the meeting with Louis.
But your moment of triumph, Your Highness, when he asks you to sit beside him.
Triumph has meaning only when it applies, my lady. It is no triumph for me. Somehow I feel it will end in tragedy. I have a horrible foreboding, something which I can't shake from my mind.
Your Highness, your good nature and your kindness will make you no enemy. These French people, they will all love you, just as your father's subjects did.
I wonder.
And so Maria Theresa, adorned in her black velvet with pearls, made her way when the hour came to the King's Palace, accompanied by Mercedes, several other attendants, and the Queen Mother. Both women gasped as they entered the great throne room, for here was a blaze of light. The rooms, decorated with luxurious comfort and splendor, a profusion of tapestries and paintings, marbles and silver plates set everywhere on massive silver stands. The gilded furniture gleamed in the candlelight from great chandeliers, and the damask of the armchairs blushed red. The colors of the velvet doublets and the brocaded gowns played in the light, and the diamonds sparkled, and the golden and silver vases and salvers, flagons and ewers shone so brightly. As she arrived at the great doors, there was a hush over the assembly. And then slowly Maria Theresa advanced across the floor to the throne. She could see him already, the king, her future husband. But it was a face misted in the brilliance of lights. And as she drew closer, the outlines became clearer. Now she was at the bottom of the steps leading to the throne, and she could hear Cardinal Mazarin's voice.
It is my honor to present Maria Theresa, Infanta of Spain, King Louis XIV of France.
Your Majesty.
A pleasure I've been looking forward to, Your Highness.
We trust you had a comfortable journey, Your Highness.
Yes, Lord Cardinal.
Would you sit here with me?
Thank you, Your Majesty.
What do you think of our court?
It is brilliant. I don't think I've ever seen so much color in all my life.
Oh, you'll get used to that. Yes, it'll be a worrisome night for you, I hear. So many people to meet and so few are amusing. My one complaint is that we lack amusement here in our court.
Lack amusement? From what I hear, Your Majesty, you are always being amused.
Oh, Your Highness, I see you have a sense of humor. Well, there is, after all, amusement and amusement.
I don't quite understand.
Well, when one is bored, one can always invoke the aid of humor. Don't you be?
I don't think I understand, Your Majesty.
Music, I hear. I think they're starting to dance. We'll be expected to dance, too. That is, if you are taught dancing in Spain.
We are not savages, Your Majesty. Of course we dance.
But I see you prefer not to. If you'll excuse me. Oh, Letitia, she's impossible.
Why?
A bore. The most incredibly dull and stupid bore. She doesn't understand what I'm talking about, and I don't know what she's talking about. Oh, what have we got ourselves into?
Oh, Your Majesty, be patient.
Patient? Can you imagine me with that sitting at the head of my table? I made a joke just now, and she looked aghast. Oh, something will have to be done, Letitia. I'm not sure even now that I can go through with it.
Edmund.
I'm here, Marguerite.
Oh, you didn't speak when I first called. I get so frightened. Oh, Edmund, darling, you feel perhaps a little better?
I'm not sure how I feel, Marguerite.
The mask. Are you getting used to the mask?
The mask? It presses more and more heavily on my shoulders. It seems not to be running to my head. It's like a weight that you carry for miles and miles. Each mile it grows heavier, heavier.
Oh, darling, if only I could help you. What are we to do, Edmund, you and I?
What is this do? We're both prisoners, trapped. If I raise a cry, if I demand to be let loose, I lose my life. That's what the king said. And yet, here in this mask. Oh, heaven help me. It cuts like a knife into my back.
Oh, if only dear old Edward would come back.
Edward?
He was the warder who saved my life. A kind old man. A man who has seen better days. If only he were here, perhaps we might. I said we might be able to throw ourselves on his generosity. He's our only hope, Edmund.
Our only hope?
Yes, my darling. Somehow I feel that if he knew the truth about you and about me... He had a daughter once, rather like myself. That's why he took pity on me. Oh, Edmund, darling, if he came back...
I...
Darling? Edmund! Edmund, answer me!
I try. It's only by an effort that I hold myself up. My hands clenched round the bars. Marguerite, you must be brave. I feel that this may be the end.
Oh, no, Edmund, don't leave me. Edmund, hold on to life.
It's stifling. Smothering. And the weight on my head. They knew it would kill me. Oh, sweetheart, I'm not strong enough to fight it. Even with your love. Even the fact that you're so...
Edmund!
So the King of France is about to pay a visit. And already we know what is in his mind. He wants to use the likeness of Edmund Marchiali and himself to his own advantage. But will the king be too late? And what of Marguerite in her cell, so close to her lover? Make sure you hear the next absorbing chapter of The Man in the Iron Mask.